This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. In an increasingly digitized world, where information is stored in the cloud and printing is no longer de rigueur, are paper and stationery companies facing extinction? To find out, we speak to Dato' Lim Soon Huat, Group Executive Chairman of Asia File Corp, a listed company with an international presence that produces filing and stationery products. Now, thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill, Dato'. I want to start with COVID-19 because it has meant that people globally are working from home, whilst, of course, schooling has been disrupted for most. So as a result, how bad has business been? Because I can assume offices and schools are probably your biggest customers.
During the start of the COVID pandemic, especially in April, May, we have a total lockdown across where we are selling. And our turnover just nosedived. Everything was literally, you know, a nightmare. You know, goods on the way to UK, Germany, etc., etc. So it was the worst 3 months of Asia File's history.
But is the worst over now, Dato? Because if I look at the first half numbers for this year, like you say, it's the worst ever. So revenue was just 111 million compared to the same period last year, it was 151 million. Same for profit after tax, 13 million versus 16.8. But are you expecting better times ahead now?
What we have seen is the worst of the company's history in the last 6 months. The worst was the first quarter, but we have seen the trough of our business. Luckily, prior to this first quarter, in 2018, we started to go into other fields or preparing ourselves to go into other fields. We went ahead and do huge study of what we can get into and which are the long-term future that we can get into based on the expertise we have. We are a good company in paper, a good company in plastics, and a good company in metal. You know, we can mix the three of them together. One of the few companies who's able to combine these three materials into a file. So using our expertise, we decided to go into footwear because we see that continuously, especially from overseas trends, food takeaway has been an in thing across the world. So Malaysia one day will have this footwear explosion. So we went into footwear. And in the process, we also wanted to go into related to the footwear, but in a slightly different segment of the industry, of the consumer side of the industry. So we went into what we called the office, the home, and living and kitchen wares, where it will complement our stationery items and our filing items, because every home or office will need some of these items. So we decided to venture into the second category, and that was immediately after we have put in a lot of work into our footwear. We are in production of paper footwear. We are in production of cups, bowls, you know, all of more or less takeaway things, plastics, all kinds of plastic containers, from lunch boxes to round containers, square containers,
but metal containers, etc. The question is, okay, when, you know, I can see that you, like you say, you have a new division, but when I look at the numbers and I look at second quarter numbers, and this is the first time I think Asia File shows the segmental earnings from this division, but it's still so small. Only 5 million ringgit contribution versus files and paper at 145 million. So the fact is, I think like you highlighted, paper perhaps going through a bit of a structural decline, COVID-19 accelerating this trend already. So can eventually this consumer and footwear business segment compensate for the loss of earnings from the paper business?
Okay, let's look into this quarter, the March quarter this year, our third, fourth quarter. Footwear and our consumer wear will probably form more than 20% of our turnover, a huge jump. All the work we have done earlier on in 2018, 2019, and the early part of 2020 to prepare ourselves, because to grow a business from scratch is not that easy. You have to understand the business well enough before we really step on the accelerator and move it up to the next gear. So we are now into the gears that we are very comfortable with this year. So you see a huge contribution in revenue, etc. I would think if I estimate, it will be this quarter alone, you're talking 5 million in the first half, probably more than double for a quarter, more than 10 million turnover will be contributed in this quarter alone.
So currently all your production facilities for this division, is it all in Malaysia and are you running at 100% capacity?
Yes, we are. And we have installed an additional 100% capacity in the course of this year. So that will bring ourselves up to 200, double up what we have on footwear. But don't forget, consumer wear is falling behind very aggressively as well. The timeline required to do this job is not just overnight. We have developed more than 200 or 300 items of consumer wear in the course of the past few years. That has been launched in December 2020. So all these are contributing to our top line and bottom line already.
How much capex will you sink into this and what kind of expected return on investment are you forecasting?
We have 280 million cash in hand. Okay, so we have unlimited resources and we have limited borrowings in this company. So we have allocated in our phase one of 30 million into footwear, but we have only utilized about 10 million of it. So you can see from 10 million, we have been able to generate a huge amount of response back. And so we have still a fair amount of capex that we can use. Consumer wear, I presume this year alone, in 2021 calendar year, we probably will invest about 40 to 50 million in capex. Because our initial investigative work is more or less over. We cannot afford to make a mistake because you are investing in capex. You must invest in the right machine, the right technology, the right approach. So we will be investing about 40 to 50 million this year.
And your ROI, your return on investment, or how soon can you make all your money back, all your capex back?
The new investments coming in, our capex on returns, we will take back our money within 5 years.
Okay, and Dato, who is your competition? Because when I try to do some digging on this segment, what I do see is that it seems very competitive and extremely fragmented. You know, so what is Asiafile's niche here? Or do you have a particular kind of customers? Because, you know, when I look back at your traditional business, which is files, you've always come out to say it's a quality superior product. Is that the same for the consumer and footwear division?
Of course, we have to make a difference in the way we approach it. So I think I have to keep that inside me first. I cannot say everything to the public.
So it's an Asiafile secret for the moment.
We're going to do a difference in what is happening. Bear in mind, everything is very fragmented in this industry.
So how do you compete? Is it based on pricing, quality of product? Or, you know, I'm trying to understand because like you say, it's fragmented.
So the first important principle we always believe in is always quality first. After quality first, then we go into the market and promote the quality we have. And we always try to offer to the market a very competitive price. What we always term value for money. Okay, this is the most important aspect of what we believe in. And we will use the same model of our success in the filing into this industry. Bear in mind, when we first started, we were just a nobody. 15,000, 30,000 ringgit turnover per month. So we have been able to develop to the current standard because of investments and innovation into productivity, products, marketing, innovation in many other things.
So, Dato, is it fair to say that all your products, be it files, stationery, and even this consumer and footwear, 100% biodegradable at this current juncture?
Yes, it is. We try to make it as much biodegradable as we can. The most important word I would use is not biodegradable, it's recyclable. We're trying to use as much waste material into this product and then produce them and make sure that as much of it or 98% of it must be recyclable. Biodegradable is very, very, how do you call it? It depends on, for certain products, if you have too fast a biodegradable aspect, it doesn't last on the shelves too long. So it must be biodegraded in the timeline for the usage of this product.
On the breakfast grill this morning is Dato' Lim Soon Huat, Group Executive Chairman of AsiaFowl. When we come back, a deeper dive on the financials and why is the company keeping it in the family? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Dato' Lim Soon Huat, Executive Chairman of AsiaFowl Corp. Just before the break, we were asking if COVID-19 is just accelerating the structural decline of their core products, and is the consumer and footwear segment the solution to this? Now, Dato', I want to go back to what is your core business, which is the fowls. 75% of your revenue comes from Europe. One issue of this is actually Brexit. And you have two production plants in the UK and another two in Germany, am I correct? So how has Brexit impacted your business?
Basically, Brexit has impact in maybe a month or two because of the Brexit custom issues, you know, and the port was congested from sometime in December to February. So this is the main effect of Brexit. We have always believed in putting a plant in UK and a plant in Germany. You know, United Kingdom is separated by the channel, English channel. So we always believe that we must be present if you want to be strong in Europe, in mainland Europe, as well as the island. So we have done that. Brexit, basically, until today, has no impact on us, except for that 2 or 3 month period of custom issues.
So it hasn't caused any cost increase, because there are reports of some UK companies who find that as a result of Brexit, their cost structure has become a little bit more difficult, more challenging. And is there freedom of goods prior to this between your, like say, your Germany production plant and also the UK production plant?
Because we have made ourselves fairly independent each way. So we are not really affected by what the other manufacturers are feeling. So we are fine for now because they have a Brexit deal, EU and Britain. So it is okay. I don't see any impact on us except a bit more custom decoration costs.
So staying on the UK and European business, can I presume all the billings there are in the pound, euro or even US dollars? So technically, AsiaFowl does benefit when the ringgit is weak. Now, at the current juncture, the pound is quite strong. It's 5.66 or thereabouts, so maybe benefiting you. But what happens when the pound comes down? I mean, do you manage your currency risk? Do you hedge?
You know, we always believe in an average cost or average selling price in pounds or in US dollars or even in ringgit. I always believe there's always an equilibrium to anything done. The pound can come down, can go up, but eventually it will be at within a range-bound amount. To me, there's always an equilibrium in the world in pricing, whether it's paper, metal, or anything else. An equilibrium between US dollars, pound, or euros. It goes up, it comes down. So we have been able, over the last 15 years, balance it out quite nicely.
So, Dato, let's move on to costs, because in quarter one financial results, the note said that cost-cutting measures were necessary. As you rightly pointed out, production had come to a grinding halt during the first MCO, although I think AsiaFowl did benefit from the wage subsidies. But are you still on a cost-cutting drive? Is there an eventual target?
We have stopped the cost-cutting drive since this year. We now have a shortage of workers. Okay, because all our other arrowheads are moving very quickly. So there's now a shortage. So we have, as I mentioned, in this quarter, my original arrowhead is still moving quite nicely. The other two arrowheads are moving very rapidly. And I believe my new businesses will form by next year more than 30% of our turnover.
So Dato, this shortage of labor, is it a Malaysian issue or is it a UK and Germany issue?
UK and Germany, we have managed our, you know, like in Malaysia, in UK, we have what we call the furlough scheme by the United Kingdom government and by the German government. We have utilized that scheme in the context of within the rules required there. So we are fine in UK as well as in Germany. I don't think we have further cost cutting of labor requirements there.
So is the solution. So am I correct to say that then the labor shortage is more a Malaysian issue?
Today, we have a Malaysian issue labor shortage. Okay.
Is then the solution automation, Datuk? Because that's one thing I notice about Malaysian companies. They're still very reliant on manual labor, even the glove makers. Is there a reluctance on your part to spend on automation and to prepare for the eventual future, you know, the IR 4.0?
I always have a strong belief in the East meeting the West, all right? So the East has low wages, the West has high wages. So we always manage a balance between the East and the West. In UK, we are highly automated. We have robots doing, you know, everything. We have everything on automated lines. And we can produce down there 4 times faster than we do that in Malaysia, or 5 times faster, with only a fraction of the labor we require here. However, the volume in Malaysia is not as huge as what it is in UK or in Germany. So full automation may not be required because we keep on changing different qualities required by the customers. When we see the need to go on a full automation, we will do so because we are extremely experienced in automation.
So when do you think you'll implement these automation plans in Malaysia? Because
Asia Fault is highly automated, by the way. It's not like in the, you know, maybe in the 80s or 90s where we have semi-automated machines. Today, we have fully automated machines here in Malaysia, but automated machines for universal production, not for single line production. We are very high automated in Penang.
But you say that your plants in Germany and UK are very far advanced technologically compared to Malaysia. So I'm just curious, why the reluctance to not implement this here? Is it because at the end of the day, wages in this country are still very low and we have this continued dependency on foreign labour?
No, that's not the reason. The reason is we don't have enough skilled workforce here. You want to have full automation. You must make sure your machines are well maintained to the standard of full automation. It's pointless to have an automation of a machine that's supposed to run 100%, that you can only run 20%, because we don't get enough skilled workers to manage and run the machines, or repair the machines, or keep them prime condition. That is really the main reason for us, the reluctance to certain aspects of the automation we can do in UK and Germany that we don't bring back to Malaysia.
Okay, and Dato, I'm looking at your FY 2020 annual report, and there was a key audit matter, and this is referring to the group's inventories, which amount to 94 million ringgit as at 31st March 2020 in the consolidated statement of financial position. Now, has this been addressed?
Okay. Our stock positions are always done based on, as you know, we sell in pounds or in euros, and everything needs to be buffered because we give long-term pricing to our customers, sometimes a year, sometimes 2 years, and we continue to support them as the supporters. Most of our customers are partners, not customers alone. So we need to keep their prices fairly consistent, you know, and support them. So sometimes we have to keep a slightly higher inventory to manage that. So the inventory is managed based on need and requirement to achieve that objective of giving consistent pricing to my customers.
Dato, this was a situation that I also saw in the 2019 annual report. Is it possible that at the end of the day, these inventories are just obsolete? And wouldn't it be more prudent to write the inventory down?
None of our inventories that is noted in the audited accounts are obsolete. None. We always go through a process flow. Anything above 1 year is treated as zero value. Anything that's 6 months is 50% value. Okay. So our inventory cost is very realistic of what we are doing.
This is something I observe about Asia Fowl. It's clearly a very family-run business because currently your brother is a director while your 2 daughters are involved. One is the business development manager, and the other daughter is the business operation manager, whilst you are both executive chairman and CEO, of course. The issue I have is that all the other independent directors have also been on your board for longer than 9 years. So do you think that there's sufficient independent oversight at Asiafile?
I believe the oversight in Asiafile is 100% because I don't get involved in any of the audits. I don't get involved in anything to do with what the independent directors are doing. They always meet, they discuss among themselves, then only I'm brought in to discuss with them.
But they've been your directors for more than 9 years.
If you ask my view, our business is a very unique business. And what most of them have, the two of the main other direct independent are also sitting in boards, other companies' boards, which they can bring good value into what we are doing. They have always been contributing to us and giving us a lot of their viewpoints from the outside. Okay, even they have been in 9 years, I see the value of what they have been promoting to us has been extremely good. So as such, we still like to keep them. No, it's not everyone who knows our business that well. All right. So they are basically policemen inside our company. We are a very, very transparent company.
And finally, Dato, why should I buy Asiafile shares?
Why?
Because currently, Bloomberg shows that it's trading at 15 times price earnings ratio, not particularly very cheap, whilst there is no dividend being paid for this year. So tell me a reason why I should look at the share price, which, by the way, has appreciated, I do believe, on a year-to-date basis.
Okay, I'm amazed by this appreciation. Okay, number one, we have more than 280 million in cash. We own 20% of Muda. I think that was a write-up about us, that just the two of these combined together is worth two ringgit 30 cents plus the business on its own. So it is a very conservative company. And the reason why little dividends or no dividends were paid in the last 1-2 years, we wanted to do a restructuring of the company. And we do not know how this restructuring will be going and how much capital do we need to do the restructuring. So we know that down the road, we will probably need between 50 million to 200 million in restructuring costs in order to make our company extremely viable long-term business model. So it is not easy to manage a change of business approach or change of business products as well. This is how we think in Asiafile.
On that note, Dato, thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill today. And congratulations on being named top nominee in the master category of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year 2020 Malaysia program. All the best on that front. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.